Point of View, Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m.
So this story has been trending for a while. Former cop Rosemary Ndlovu has denied that she called for a hit on her sister and five children. Ndlovu is currently appearing at the Palm Ridge Magistrate Court. You may have seen images coming through on social media and on some other media houses as well. She's accused of hiring hitmen to kill her sister Joyce Ndlovu and her five children in a bid to receive insurance payout. Oh, my goodness. I don't know if you saw footage, as I said, from other media houses, but from our news desk, Nyakallo Tefo was watching that story for us. Nyakallo, thank you so much for your time. Good evening.
Hi, Pimelo. How are you?
My goodness, Nyakallo, I am so well. I want to know about the story. So, Rosemary Ndlovu, we saw pictures of her taking, almost posing, right, for reporters and so on. And what did you make of her state of mind when you saw her appear this morning?
So, it was actually very concerning that that's what she wanted to bring out at the beginning of the hearing. I mean, she was posing, asking us where we're going to post the pictures. Is it on Google? Is it on Twitter? It was as if she wanted to portray sort of a clown behavior in front of everyone before the proceedings started. But as soon as the proceedings started, she just became serious and a little bit of attitude towards the person who's asking her the question.
She also, as I was saying, I mean, I found it quite bizarre. There was a talk of her saying that she's a celebrity. There was a little bit of chit-chat between herself and journalists and asking them, you know, to come closer and take better pictures. Does she want to, you know, does she look better this way and so on? And I found that, I mean, I was quite confused about what looked like a very strange behavior. But as the proceedings went, she broke down as well, didn't she?
She did. That was at the end of the day where she was being asked about the death of her sister. Her sister's drink was spiked, and she started breaking down when they just started asking her questions and just relaying what the other witnesses had said, because the other witness had said that when the cops got there, she took out the cup that her sister was drinking from and rinsed the cup in a basin. And that's when she started to break down from a very sort of strong and very full of attitude to somebody who just broke down. And I couldn't make up if it was, you know, if she was just tired of the back and forth of questions, or it was really genuine because of how she had been from the beginning. So it was very difficult to tell if it was just really just genuine crying that she had lost her sister or something like that.
So what is she charged with? And just give us the details of the charge sheet.
So she is being accused of killing several family members. That would include her sister, her sister's boyfriend as well. She is also accused of trying to kill her other sister, who's from Bushbuck Ridge, her sister and five other five of her kids, I beg your pardon. But she has denied all this. She has denied everything that every other witness has said against her. So there were two officers who just kept, who told the court about how she, well, the process of her going to, to Bushbuck Ridge with them. That was in Jabulo, Kunene, and Lakiwe and Kize. They last week they appeared, and they were just telling the court that she took them to Bushbuck Ridge to show them her sister's house, but she denied it, and she said she's never done this. She doesn't know why Kunene and Kize are telling the court this, saying that these are false testimonies. So she is being charged with that, but the judge didn't say much about her, what she's going to be charged with, because the proceedings are continuing tomorrow. We're just hearing her side of the story, which, Pimela, I must emphasize that it was very difficult to get anything out of her. She kept going around in circles and not answering the question exactly. Mm-hmm. And she had been asked to please answer the question, because you're not answering the question. You're giving us a different story of something else. So it was a very, very long proceeding, because she just didn't want to answer the questions exactly. No matter how straightforward an answer is, she was trying to find ways to bring in a story regarding that question, which didn't answer the question at all.
Nicola, does she have representation? Did she have a lawyer present there?
So it was just a question from the state so far. So we didn't.
In other words, someone to advise her.
Yes, basically, yeah.
Yeah. We know she's a cop. What else do we know about her?
We just know that she's a cop. And yeah, that's all the information they gave about her. We're not sure if she's a mother or anything else, but we just know she's a cop. She did work in Tembisa as a cop.
Mm-hmm. The footage that we've been seeing on social media, is that admissible?
Mm-hmm. So she had asked the court to see the footage again, because she said she doesn't recall what happened, or she doesn't recall what was said in the video. And when she was asked whether she remembers, now that the court had shown her the entire video, she says, yeah, I see the video, but I didn't say anything about ordering a hit on my sister and her kids. So she denied everything in the video as well. Which was a bit sketchy, because they kept asking, okay, what was this video about? And she couldn't give us a straightforward answer regarding that.
Hmm. And, I mean, when are we likely to see them again? I believe Wednesday? Is that the next
court
date?
Yes, tomorrow morning from 9 o'clock, the court will get in, and we will hear her side of the story again. They are bringing in another witness. They just didn't mention who they're bringing in, but it will be Ndlovu speaking again, and another witness speaking tomorrow.
Were there any other family members in court? You know, people who, and this is difficult because this is her own family. So, was there anybody mm-hmm. else there present in court?
There weren't any family members from her side. It was just a court full of either journalists and police officers, but there wasn't anybody that we identified as a family member.
Mm-hmm. And nobody that may have been a colleague, maybe, to verify if she's stable?
No, there was nobody who had been a colleague. She did, however, just speak about that she was in she wanted to get herself into a psychiatric ward. Just before the alleged hit, right, she said she went to Arvape Hospital, that's in Kempton Park, and she asked for a day visit at the hospital where she wanted to go into a psychiatric ward, but there weren't any wards available. However, that was the day where she was fetched to go to Bush Park Ridge as well. So it also just, the story just gets mixed up right there, that she wanted to go to a psychiatric ward, but as well she also decided to travel to Bush Park Ridge on that very same day.
Did she say why she wanted to admit herself?
She didn't exactly say. She just said she did go to hospital for a day, and she also didn't say what caused it.
All right. Let's just leave it there. We've just lost Nyakalo there, but we will definitely be speaking to her tomorrow. Nyakalo Tefo is our Kaya FM reporter, as we discuss that story that has been making the rounds. In fact, this is trending. Rosemary Ndlovu, who is accused of killing her sister, a boyfriend as well, and was plotting to kill her other sister and five other children. This was caught on tape, on a video, by a person she thought was a hitman. And by all accounts today, she denied knowing any of this, even though there is a video recording of that particular conversation. It's actually quite eerie. If you've seen it, I mean, let me know what you think of that. But she was very blasé about it, you know, burned the house down, and there was a conversation around the children. And she was asked, you know, what is this for? She says, no, for insurance money. And the gentleman then says to her, What about the children? Are you going to get a payout for that? She says, no, this is because I don't want witnesses left behind, kind of thing. Just very, very bizarre. I find the story quite bizarre. And maybe the question is, do we find it bizarre because it's a woman? Is that what makes it so difficult to believe? I'd love to hear your take on the story. 086-000-0959. And how many of these people are around us? People who are going around making insurance claims on people's lives. It's a thing, I'm told. So I'd love to hear from you. How many of these people are amongst us? 086-000-0959. Now, what we have decided to do is to get someone who's going to help us understand just how much of this is prevalent in our society. Megan Govender is a convener of Forensic Standing Committee at ASISA on the line with us. Megan, thank you so much for your time. Good evening.
Good evening to Milo and good evening to your listeners.
So how prevalent is this, Megan? Are people amongst us all waiting to get us killed so that they can claim insurance money?
Yes, it is something that is prevalent. I must say that the incident that's currently playing out in Palm Ridge Magistrates Court happened in 2018, mm-hmm. but we still see We're still picking up incidents of people that are being murdered for insurance benefits from an insurance policy.
Yeah. So how easy is it? You know, when a claim comes through, how stringent are you before you actually pay out?
We are quite stringent. I mean, in terms of, you know, paying out, obviously we do have certain service level agreements that we have with our clients, in that, you know, some companies have 2 hours, 4 hours, 48 hours to pay out a claim.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, what happens in the background, we have a number of internal controls that are used to identify something amiss on claims that are submitted to us.
And I'm concerned about why we still don't have to get consent from the person who's been insured.
Look, you know, I think in a number of instances that we do pick up these fraudulent claims,
mm-hmm.
the information that's been submitted to us has been misrepresented to the insurer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you take out a policy and you cover your nieces and your nephews, and when the insurer asks you, you know, what's the relationship, you indicate on the application form, you know, that the person, the individual is, you know, your mother, your father, your sister, your children,
mm-hmm.
and there's at application stage there's very little that's done to validate that, and obviously, you know, it's also based on a trust relationship. We trust that what the person, the client is giving us is the facts.
But I mean, obviously, if we're getting more and more of these, surely is this not a consideration at all to start introducing consent as being one of the criteria?
We are looking at it. But obviously, you know, with the various companies, different types of products have been introduced over time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some you need to get direct consent from the lives being covered. In others, you know, it's based on the product type. You can, you know, cover extended family on them.
Mm. So what's most prevalent? What kind of fraud do you see the most? Is it of murder or is it just of claiming for money, perhaps where one has just maybe lost something or has been hijacked or there has been a fire at a house? Is it often murder or for other reasons?
Look, I think we need to distinguish between long-term insurance products and short-term insurance products. Short-term insurance products is around our, you know, our house, our vehicles, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
What we're talking about today is more on the long-term insurance products, which is, you know, your life cover, your disability, your funeral cover, and so forth. And we see, you know, murder, yes, is one that we've seen is common, and we're seeing more incidents of that in the last year.
In this
especially
past
because
year?
Yes, and I mean, CISA has released the fraud claim stats about 2-3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, we've indicated, you know, what were the trends we saw in 2020
mm-hmm.
In terms of fraudulent claims.
Mm.
And we saw, you know, murder was one of them. We saw the purchase of bodies for insurance purposes. So
explain you know, what that is. What's purchase of bodies for insurance purposes?
So you know, very often at some of our mortuaries and morgues, you have unclaimed bodies that you know, no one's claimed for a number of months.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, people have realized that there's money to be made there. So they take the body, they get an ID for the person, they take out cover, and many months later, after paying the insurance premiums, they register the debt with Home Affairs. Obviously, you know, there's a few different scenarios that are at play. One of them is, you know, leaving the body on the side of the road to make it look like it was an accident.
Oh, my word.
And then through that, you know, an identification process happens, and the fraudster comes through and identifies the body. And through that process, obviously gets all the documentation necessary to submit a insurance claim.
Oh, my goodness. So this buying of people's bodies happens. So in other words, they go all the way and even bury people that they don't know?
Yes. Yes. We've also seen in recent times, you know, deaths that happened many, many years ago that are not registered on the Home Affairs system,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, they didn't come out, take out a funeral policy and with a number of different insurers,
mm-hmm.
and then go and register the deed at Home Affairs. And again, through that process, you get all the documentation you need to submit the fraudulent claim.
So explain, just let me understand this. In other words, if I've lost a family one and maybe it was not recorded at Home Affairs, I then come mm-hmm. back and then claim that this person has recently died.
Yes.
How would it have happened at Home Affairs that this person was not registered as having passed on?
So there's a lot of instances where, you know, people pass on and the death never gets registered from a technical perspective at Home Affairs. And what happens is that, you know, people didn't see the opportunity because they realized that, you know, the deceased has not been, you know, properly been registered as deceased.
But
so they didn't use that as...
I'm still stuck on... So this person would have died, buried and everything, without a death certificate? It's the death certificate that you're talking about?
Yes, so the death certificate was never issued at the actual date of death.
Yes.
So many, many months or many years later, after they take out a policy mm-hmm. For substantial amounts of money, they then go and formally register the debt at Home Affairs.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, through the I've referred to this as the insurance fraud value chain.
Mm-hmm.
Through that whole process, you know, they know exactly which doctor, morgue, to approach, which hospital to go to get the supporting documents that they need for that claim.
So it sounds to me then like there's a syndicate of these people who there's a supplier, then there's somebody at the morgue, and then there's somebody to certify and so on.
Yes, there's people that are actively working together to defraud insurance companies. Obviously, there's a lot of money to be made out of this. And again, you know, it's quite easy for someone to be covered on multiple policies across different insurers.
Mm-hmm. So, goodness, if there is a network, do you end up blacklisting some mortuaries or you know, individuals who like doctors, for instance, who may have been a part of this practice?
So we don't have an actual blacklist,
mm-hmm.
But what we do is we do have we do red flag specific doctors, funeral parlors, and so forth. So when they do come up on, you know, future claims,
mm-hmm.
then further investigation work gets done on those claims to ensure that they're actually valid.
So
there's a lot of work that goes on in the background.
Some red flags that are quite common that alert you to the fact that, you know, this is not kosher.
Mm-hmm. So some of the red flags that we pick up is, you know, the how soon after the policy was issued has the claim been submitted. The cause of death typically is also another giveaway, especially, you know, when the circumstances around the death are suspicious. We also interview the various players in a claim, because you could have, you know, if you take four people driving in a car, those four people could play four different roles on a claim today and four different roles in a claim tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a number of internal controls that insurers obviously have built up over the years. And we use that to identify claims as and when they come through. And obviously, you know, we also do have, our member companies do have investigation teams. As and when claims are being identified for specific flags, investigators are allocated to investigate and validate the claim.
So how do we then protect ourselves against fraudsters like this? How do I know? What can I do not to be a victim of someone who's eyeing me to claim insurance on my life?
Look, I think, you know, the one thing that I think is critical to this is, you know, how do we protect our personal information?
Okay.
I think, you know, we often find that in a lot of these instances, people have information on us that they can use.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, you know, to regularly check with your insurance advisor, intermediary, that, you know, that you are covered, to do a check to see where you're covered.
Okay, so you're able to check somewhere that, you know, who's covered you and where you're covered. You're able to do that?
So there are systems that insurance, the intermediaries have access to. So we don't have access to that system, but intermediaries do have a portal that they can go and inquire. I think the portal is via a company called Astute, that these inquiries are done. Through APIs, the checks are done to see where you may have cover, and obviously that information is used to give advice.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can always use your insurance, your intermediary or your advisor to do that checks for you.
Okay. And what's the law on this? Should you always know when someone has covered you and insured your life?
Look, there isn't specific law around it. I think, you know, we need to be savvy about our personal information and who you provide it to. Because that's where the start of all of this happens, is that, you know, someone's got a devious plan that they want to hatch, and they come and ask you, you know, for your personal information, ID number, and so forth. And it takes basic information to take out a funeral policy. So, and obviously, you know, our policies were never designed for fraudsters. It was designed in a way that, you know, it makes it easy for the man on the street to take out a policy. But obviously, people who are devious find ways around to circumvent that process to take out cover. And I've been in forensics for almost 18, 19 years now, and you know, the schemes that come up are not new schemes. It's very similar schemes I've seen, you know, 19 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I doubt that a fraudster is going to ask you. I mean, unless if you're telling me that people are really brazen, some of this information may be lying, you know, where it should be. So if you are employed, maybe you obviously have your information sitting with HR and there's nothing you can do about that and so on.
Look, obviously, you know, corporate companies have controls around HR data and so forth, but I mean, there's lots of places where information can be accessed. You go into a building and they ask you for a whole range of information, including your ID number.
Yes.
Now, have you ever stopped to ask you know, the building security manager, what do they do with those single pages of paper once they're done?
Well, the problem also is that I've refused to give people my ID number, and they look at you like, you know, who do you think you are type thing. Everybody provides it. We expect you to give it to us type thing.
Look, I mean, to be honest, I've tested the system a few times.
Yes.
At various places where, you know, I put in the under the name Mickey Mouse. and no one, you know, the security doesn't pick it up. So, you know, what's the purpose of filling in a form? But I think, you know, I think my point is that, you know, many people that enter buildings or complexes or wherever, you know, authentically give out that information.
Mm.
And I think, you know, that's an area that, you know, we need to start to protect, because I think the more we protect our personal information, the better we get at mitigating fraud risk.
So what can we learn from all of this? I mean, one of the things that you're saying is that protect our information. Is there any other tip you want to give us, those who are listening?
Look, I think, you know, we need to be vigilant.
Mm.
And if we know of someone that's defrauding an insurance company, you know, make a call to the hotlines. All of our member companies have a fraud hotline that you can phone and, you know, share this information. And I think, you know, more people that come out and provide this information, the better we get at mitigating it and the better we get at actually identifying the people behind it, especially the syndicates.
Megan, thank you so much for your time. Megan Govinda is a convener of the Forensic Standing Committee at ASISA, and he was just giving us a sense of how prevalent this is. It sounds to me like it's very prevalent. To think that this last year, the number of claims of people on murder, I mean, it's really creepy. I mean, I'm scared as we speak right now. So the bottom line is that I think you need to be very careful about who you give out your information to. And if possible, go and check who's covered you, where are you covered, just to always know. I mean, I never thought of this, but the person that would have sold you the insurance, that's probably the right person to ask and say, you know, listen, won't you just do a background check? Who's covered me? Where am I covered? For how much? And so on. And then that, I hope, will be part of our
Kaya Talk on Kaya 959.
On the street, on the air.